Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt and this is another podcast for The Diplomat and the Beyond the Mekong program. With me today is Phil Robinson. Phil is the Director of Asia Human Rights and Labour Advocates. He's also a well-known character around Thailand. He's done an enormous amount of work in regards to human rights over the decades. And Phil, welcome to the program. Thanks, Thailand. I'm in Cambodia on either side of the disputed border, and it's a bit of a mess.
It is a very significant mess. You know, you basically have a border that was very, very active, cross-border trade, agricultural exports, migrant workers going across, and all of a sudden all that's ended. You have a border closure that is definitely impacting both countries, and there doesn't seem to be any sign that that's going to end. You know, I see here in Thailand that the nationalists are, in fact, continuing to ramp up pressure against the Cambodian side. No one in Thai politics dares to say anything positive about Cambodia, much less actually talk about negotiating a serious peace treaty, unless Cambodia makes a whole number of concessions. And, you know, it doesn't seem like either side is prepared to put the first step forward to trying to make peace. You know, we just saw Prime Minister Anutin here saying that he only cares about Thailand's interests in response to a recent letter from Donald Trump urging that the two sides take negotiations towards peace. So it's not a terribly bright picture here if peace is the idea that we need to get back to normal for these two countries. In fact, it seems to be heading the opposite direction towards greater disputes, wars of words continuing, and, you know, serious concerns that some point or another something will happen that will cause both sides to start shooting each other again.
Right, and they sent the D-miners in to clear the land at Prey Chan and Chukchay on the border on Friday. And the noises that from the Cambodian side, from Thailand, there's not going to be an election there until May. They're going to dissolve parliament in January, I think. And I think Cambodians feel like they're going to be the whipping post, the Thai politicians and the military, for the next 8 months at least. No one can see the border being reopened before the next election there.
That's correct. You know, Thailand is going towards an election. Anutin said that he was going to abide by the agreement that he made with the People's Party to hold an election within the next 4 months. I mean, what will probably happen is there'll be a dissolution of parliament and moving towards that election. It'll take a couple months, as you mentioned, to organize the election. But the latest is also that Anutin is proposing to have a number of ballot questions that are also posed to Thai voters at the same time as the election. And those would be to abolish memorandums of an understanding 43, which set up the joint committee between Thailand and Cambodia to negotiate the border, and then 44, which sort of set out the terms of reference for those negotiations. What I think we're going to see is Anutin using those two questions, if they do in fact come forward, to try to turn out conservative voters, nationalist voters, who he perceives as favoring him as opposed to other political parties. Most people think it's a really bad idea to take a technical treaty like an MOU between two countries and put it to the idea of the voters, you know, who frankly don't really understand what these memorandums of understanding are all about. You know, they're quite technical. Yeah. But this is all about turning out your base. And I think that's what Anutin's proposal is about. And the opposition People's Party is quite concerned about that because they recognize that this is all about just, you know, red meat for the nationalists, you know, come out and vote against the MOUs against Cambodia, you know, and use that as a sort of stalking horse for continuing to fire things up amongst the conservative base in Thailand.
Yeah, I mean, it seems rather innocuous to sort of like take MOUs and attached them to a referendum. And there was one of the opposition politicians mentioned the other day that, you know, it's a pointless exercise, but what are you really trying to do? And they're pointing out that under these MOUs that more than half of the Cambodian-Thai border has been demarcated. And what does that mean? Does that mean that all these agreements are just going to go out the window? The Cambodian government has said that they fear that that the Thais have targeted 17 locations across the border that they want to take as their own. Now, we could go on about historical reasons and a refusal to accept the boundaries that were drawn up by the French over 100 years ago, but, you know, that's all pretty well documented. But it's a little bit like kind of what is the game plan here? And I'm trying to avoid who started what, because there's obviously baiting on both sides, and I don't think either side have covered themselves in glory on this one.
That's right. Well, I think that you are right to raise some serious concerns. My view is that if the MOUs are put to a referendum as part of the national election in Thailand and they go down, that you are basically back to zero in the Thailand-Cambodia border demarcation process. I mean, MOU 43 is just basically setting up the committee. So, you know, if you do away with one committee, you're still going to have to set up some other sort of system to negotiate across the border and, you know, deal with those very technical issues of border demarcation. You know, so I don't understand why they're doing that. But, you know, from a political point of view, it makes a lot of sense. You know, for instance, it's similar to what we saw in 2024 in the United States, where, you know, the Democrats were very happy that a number of states, for instance, were putting ballot questions on about abortion rights because they recognized that people would come out to vote on that question. You know, people who were supporting women's rights to choose were more likely to support Democrats. So, of course, you want a ballot question coinciding with a national election when you have your candidates on the ballot. And I think that the same dynamic is going to happen here if Anutin is successful in putting those referendum, you know, on the ballot about MOU 43 and 44.
Right. While we're on the subject of the United States, how successful, where do we start this? Okay. Donald Trump did not get the Nobel Peace Prize, which was not surprising.
Not surprising at all.
Yeah. And the truce that was struck by Malaysia with Chinese and American pressure, I think people was worthy of applause.
Correct.
It did muddle up what countries were in conflict. I think it was Cambodia and Armenia or something. But the kind of Trump circus aside, Mario Rubio, he was most upset when the Thais deported the Uyghurs earlier this year.
Yes.
Thailand is a signature ally with the United States. They have made it clear that, you know, this war is undeclared war, has gone way too far. In terms of outside diplomatic pressure from the United States or China, is that likely to achieve anything?
Well, I think the interesting thing is going to be actually the dynamic of influence and influence being applied by the U.S. Vis-a-vis China in trying to solve this conflict, because you now see China becoming more active as well. China, of course, was denying Thai allegations that they had sold weapons to Cambodia that were used against the Thais. In fact, the Chinese said, no, those weapons were given well before the border conflict started, and no new weapons have been given since then that were used. But what you see is an effort by both China and the U.S. to influence how this is going to go. And Thailand, as a major non-NATO ally of the United States, certainly has a lot of interest in keeping the U.S. happy, but they're not going to do it at the expense of making sure that that, you know, for instance, Anutin wins the next election. He's not going to set out in any sort of writing to Trump in response to a letter that, you know, he's going to make concessions. And what you see is on both sides, a dynamic where neither side wants to make concessions. Neither side wants to appear weak. Neither one wants to be seen as giving in anything to anything. And so, you know, the U.S. and China may be pushing on both of these sides, but ultimately it may not be resolved until sometime next year. And, you know, ASEAN, you know, has done what it could to, like, basically restore peace. And they have, of course, the confidence building where you have the inspections by the military attaches on both sides of the border happening. And all that's well and good. But without political will on both sides to try to solve this, this situation is just going to bump along the bottom with major damage to ordinary people on both sides of the border. You know, there's a lot of farmers, for instance, you know, farming pumpkins and other things who are exporting those things to Thailand. They can't do that anymore. There's a lot of Cambodian migrant workers who have been forced to leave the country because they didn't feel secure. And they've gone back and there's no work for them. There's no work for them in Cambodia. And, you know, especially in the eastern regions of Thailand, this has also meant labor shortages because it's not easy to replace these migrant workers. So there's lost productivity. It's important to recognize that, you know, we're talking about cross-border trade between the two sides that was valued at an estimated $5 billion U.S. dollars in 2024. So this is not a small thing. And, you know, there was almost a 98% drop in trade in July of this year. So you're really going to see economic pain, I think, first in Cambodia, but also in Thailand from this ongoing stalemate.
Right. I mean, Thailand is in a kind of unsettling position, for want of a better word. I mean, you've got the, pardon me, you've got the conflict in Myanmar and what's happening across the borders in Mae Sot. You've got the conflict with Cambodia, obviously, on the eastern side. The ructions still keep happening in southern Thailand along the Malay border with the Islamic insurgencies. And then around the entire country, including Laos, Cambodia, Myanmar, you've still got this layer of organized crime that continually seems to be able to do whatever it wants. And the numbers, you know, it's a $1 trillion industry. We could globally, everything you put into it. I mean, the numbers are just absolutely staggering. And I remember writing about this 3-4 years ago, and people were like, "Oh no, no, oh no, that's just." It's almost like you journalists are exaggerating it. Well, now they're kicked out of our hands, and it's up in Congress. It's all over the place. And I think the latest report I saw, which was surprised me somewhat, was that it was the Americans, the Australians, and basically the English-speaking world that is now the number one target, where before it was the Chinese targeting Chinese criminal gangs, mainly targeting Chinese and Southeast Asians. But it's an extraordinary sweep. And then, sorry, just on top of that, because I do want your opinion on this, there's the latest one is that the South Koreans have called the Cambodian ambassador of a young man who was kidnapped, tortured, killed. It was an extortion demand. Now, the numbers, I'll give you a quick read that according to South Korea's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the numbers of South Koreans in Cambodia who have been kidnapped jumped from 10 to 20 cases annually between 2022 and 2023, which sounds like an enormous amount. But then the cases to date have jumped to 330. It's 330 South Koreans. And they're not talking about scam compounds. They're talking about kids coming here on holidays. Now, a lot of this is not getting reported. Mind you, there's not much of an independent media here anymore. But it's like the whole scam compound operations and the criminal syndicates is one reason it's been cited, the border conflict between Cambodia and Thailand.
Well, I think that what you're seeing is a souring of Cambodia as a stable country where foreign investors can be assured that they can go in there and actually get a fair shake. You know, the fact that, you know, you have these South Koreans being detained and facing extortion demands, you know, it reminds me of the sort of situation in the Philippines that we saw for a period of time where, you know, you also had foreign investors being targeted. You had that famous case where, you know, again, somebody was arrested and killed for that. You know, and it also reminds me going back to like the sort of mid-1990s when, you know, after UNTAC had finished there and there were all these guys driving around these UNTAC labeled Toyota Land Cruisers that somebody figured out that, like, if you stuck a gun in the face of the driver, they'd give you this Land Cruiser. And, you know, all these Land Cruisers ended up being stolen. You know, and it turned out that it was like, you know, the kids of like various police generals and others who were doing it and selling the Land Cruisers on to Vietnam. You know, something has happened here where, you know, the situation in Cambodia is starting to destabilize. And, you know, there's so much debt. There's been numerous reports coming out about the sort of massive levels of household debt in Cambodia. And now with the closure of the border, one of the major outlets for a family facing debt, which was to send kids to go work in Thailand and send back money, is closed. So, you know, the situation, I think, is going to get more desperate in Cambodia, and we're going to see more of these criminal activities taking place. You know, the scam centers are an ongoing problem, you know, and there's plenty of blame to go around because there's certainly people in Thailand who have been collaborating with these kind of things for a
while.
You know, but Thailand has now set it out, you know, one of Anutin's four conditions for getting to peace talks was an end to scamming coming from Cambodia. And, you know, that's a precondition that is never going to be met. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, are they really serious about reaching peace, or are they just sort of trying to score political points? And I think right now, especially in the lead up to the forthcoming Thai election, it's all about scoring political points. And, you know, the idea is that Anutin feels that the Cambodian border issue is one that favors him because he's seen as closer to the military. He's seen as closer to the conservatives, and the conservatives are seen as like the defenders of sovereignty. You know, and the People's Party, which is in the opposition but won the most seats in the May 2023 election, are a little bit on the back foot on that issue and are concerned that, you know, unless they talk tough as well, that they're going to be outflanked by Anutin and face a bit of a sort of popular wave of discontent that, you know, somehow the Cambodians are being treated with kid gloves by the opposition.
Right, the criminal syndicates is to my mind, this is really where a lot of it started. Then you had and a lot of it was down in the areas that was once controlled by Thaksin Shinawatra, who's now back in prison. He had a strong relationship with Hun Sen. That's, I'm not suggesting that they had it, that they're responsible for these syndicates, by the way. I think it came about quite differently when the Chinese left. But it's just the fluid nature of Thai politics and this sort of relationship they've had with Cambodia over the years. There was the anti-Thai riots in 2003, Prager here again in 2008. And now it's extraordinary. I mean, one of the points I wanted to make too, just going to point out, was the D-miners were sent into areas which a lot of people question whether they needed D-mining at all, the Thai areas. So the Thais have imposed Thai sovereign law over these disputed areas. They've got martial law going on 50 kilometres back. But what they mean is that those Cambodians, what they say is living in on Thai territory, are now subject to Thai law. That could include the death penalty, which Cambodia does not have. And so they've sent in the demining areas and basically used them as tanks to seal off these different areas. And there's just weird stuff going on. Like the Cambodians have named Guntuk Thongpaibunwet. Now, this guy is known for loading up sewage trucks, driving down to the border and spraying Cambodians literally with feces.
Well, they actually stopped. They stopped him from doing that. He wasn't able to do that. He threatened to do, and he went there with these sewage trucks, which had Thai flags on them. So he was criticized a bit for that. But
we're gonna spray you with Thai shit. I mean, really?
Well, but this is the thing. I mean, this is where the Thai nationalists, just like the Cambodian nationalists, are having a field day. They can just make stuff up. I mean, it was like when you had, the claims from the Cambodian side that the Thais were using chemical weapons, and then they were using photos of the planes dropping the pink fire retardant on the fires in Los Angeles. So, I mean, what you have right now, and this is part of the problem, is that you have these nationalists on both sides going to town on this issue. It's very easy to whip up sentiment against Cambodia, or it's very easy to whip up sentiment against Thailand. And, this guy like Gun Jompalang, this is a social media influencer who, eyes on his page, eyes on what he's doing is, the critical piece of how he operates. So, he's going to jump right in. And this is, he's been, for instance, the latest was the sort of a bad soundtrack from like a Thai horror film, like being broadcast across the border in some disputed areas. This is like what we saw, this sort of juvenile stuff we see between like South Korea and North Korea, where they're blaring things across the border at each other.
Exactly.
It really is not conducive to any sort of resolution of problems. It's all about people, operating their own reality TV show and basically getting more views on screens for their antics. And, this guy, like many others, are going to play it up for all they can. And the unfortunate problem is that it's going to make it more difficult to get towards a serious negotiation and trying some sort of settlement of the border.
Yeah.
So, ultimately that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a big problem here where, the nationalists rhetoric and the ongoing discussion by the nationalists, I think, are going to continue to dominate, for the next 6 months to a year before we get more serious minds involved in trying to reopen a border. And the direct impact is going to be, I don't know how they're going to resolve the disputed enclaves in the various different parts of the border. Maybe they're not. Thailand has, in fact, seized many of these places. Thailand still has these Cambodian prisoners of war who are being held, and I think those people are being held as de facto hostages, against Cambodian good behavior, which is unfortunate because, in fact, those POWs should be allowed to go home to their families.
Yeah, no, the POWs are quite interesting. Obviously there's, each side has its own stories, but the idea that you can, the truce was brokered, the soldiers were invited to come over and shake hands. They did that, and someone pointed guns at them and said, "You're now ours." We were talking about this. We had a bit of a roundtable session the other night, but it's like nobody can think of any war where that happened before. Peace is peace. No, just couldn't think of another example where that.
Right. The bottom line is they need to be allowed to go home. That's the bottom line. The conflict has ended. There's no good reason for them to continue to be held. I think what's happened is that, Thailand is presumably holding them for some condition or some sort of reason that we haven't seen yet. I just don't understand why they're still being held.
Yeah, I think it's a very similar attitude from this side of the border, including the government, but also people are like, why are you doing this? Is there any bargaining position on this one? There's no, There's just that doesn't seem to be anything to be gained. Do you, for many years, you were one of your pet subjects was transnational repression.
Right.
And I did a podcast with Chloe Riddell, who's a European Member of Parliament. She's charged with pulling together a response for the Parliament in terms of transnational repression. We're seeing this repression, transnational crime. Transnational crime is often inflicted by people who are running the criminal syndicates because you can deploy them. We're seeing Interpol deployed, not for its original purpose, which was arresting drug traffickers, murderers, people who are on the run. Now they're being used by governments like Iran to pick up political dissidents. It's just sort of like it's kind of difficult to explain in that it just seems to be a what we'd say in Australia, a dog's breakfast. It's just a complete mess. Where would you start?
Well, I
And
think the
also, you've
trans.
got the autocrats taking advantage of this.
Look, transnational repression is certainly a growing trend. And it's something that, I think has been going on for a while. But what we had was like about 4 to 5 years ago, someone came up with the term transnational repression, which was a very convenient way to sort of group a set of what had been previously disparate kind of actions. And certainly we saw this during the period of time when we had the military government led by Prayut Chan-o-Cha, and also going during the government of Thaksin's daughter, Pei Tong Tan Shinawat, and other associated politicians of the Pueatai Party. I mean, the only positive thing that we've seen from this Thai-Cambodia war is the end of the transnational repression agreements that were operating between Bangkok and Phnom Penh, where we had numerous Cambodian refugees and asylum seekers forced back to Cambodia, during a period of the last decade. But there's a trade here. I mean, now, Cambodian refugees who have fled to Thailand, and there are significant numbers of them, political people, opposition party people, NGO leaders, and others, those people are not necessarily at risk of being sent back to Phnom Penh as they might have been like a year ago before this war started. But they're now at threat in public of, somehow
Right.
being identified by vigilantes or others and facing being targeted or being attacked. That's a problem now. But the larger issue of transnational repression, I think what we've seen is an effective eroding of the various red lines, which was that, if someone fled from one country to another to seek asylum, that, they should be allowed to stay there or they should be allowed to go to a third country. In the old days, you had just a few countries like China, who had the real sort of interest in to like pursuing their dissidents overseas. But a lot of other countries, including Cambodia, like, if a dissident ran off, like they went to a third country to escape repression, they'd be like, okay, they're gone. That's fine. We'll just get back to what we were doing in other things. But that is not the question situation now. What we have is an effort by states and governments, particularly by authoritarians, to pursue their dissidents wherever they go around the world. And that's now become a bigger problem. And the effort by a number of states, we had during the Biden administration a real understanding that this transnational repression was a big deal and a big problem. And there was a lot of renewed funding going to support efforts to try to combat that by, the likes of Freedom House and others. All that has gone away during the Trump administration. It's all been
Right,
wiped
and
out.
there was the assassination of the Cambodian opposition
Oh, Lim
politician
Kim
Win
Yeah.
Myint. That was in January in Khao
Right.
San Road, Bangkok, a major tourist precinct. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he's gunned down in front of his French wife. If you want to make an
Yes.
international incident of it, now, why? I mean, the whole thing, and has this contributed to the ill feeling between Thailand and Cambodia? Is this had an impact in terms. I mean, I don't think it's enough to start a border conflict. However,
No, well, see, but the thing is, that happened at a period of time when you still had Pathongtan Shinawat as the Prime Minister of Thailand. You still had the ongoing sort of relationship between Bangkok and Phnom Penh that was the warm feelings between the Shinawat clan and the Hun Sen and his clan. So the sense that we had was, in fact, that the Thais knew that the Cambodians were going to target him and probably had given permission to do so. What they didn't know and what they were shocked about was the cruelty of gunning someone down in broad daylight. It was actually the killing was done in front of the temple where Thailand's supreme patriarch of Buddhism resides, you know, and you know, that was just outrageous and unacceptable. And so that is why there was a effective and quick effort by Thailand to sort of identify the gunman and go after that person. But the bottom line was that there's been no real effective pressure before the border blew up for Cambodia to send the masterminds behind this.
Right.
And, you know, certainly there was the spotter, Phik Kim Srin, who is someone who is well known as being close to Hun Sen and the Hun clan. And there was another individual, Lee Ratanasamy, who was, in fact, a person who was formerly active with the Cambodian National Rescue Party and then had become a defector and was the key person pointing out where various different opposition people were operating from. And so this was an informer for the Cambodian People's Party and the regime in Cambodia. And these are people, of course, that Hun Sen and Hun Manet were not prepared to give up. And so, you know, nothing has happened. And what is particularly disappointing is the weak, absolutely pathetic action by the French government to defend, you know, Lim Kim Ya, who was a French national who was killed. I mean, both the French embassy in Thailand, the French embassy in Cambodia deserve brickbats for their complete failure to do any sort of meaningful advocacy to try to assure that the people who are really involved in this are held accountable. You know, it's really a sad day for French diplomacy to see this sort of thing happen. And so what we've had now is we've had the one guy who was the gunman who has been sentenced to life imprisonment. His accomplice who drove him to the border is got off, and there's no sign of any sort of accountability on the Cambodia side. And now I think what they're going to do is just bury the case. And, you know, Lim Kim Ya's poor widow, who came out for the trial, which happened at the beginning of this month, you know, really pronounced herself very unhappy with the fact that, you know, there was no wider accountability, you know, that the scapegoat was imprisoned and that was all well and good. But the reality is that, you know, this is a gunman who had people behind him who would put him up to it. And none of those other people are going to be held accountable.
It's just worth quickly pointing out that the relationship with the Shinawatra has obviously deteriorated. Hun Sen released the private conversation, which led to a downfall. But going back to this assassination, in the interim, constitutional amendments have been made in Cambodia, whereby, initially, I think it's in response to the conflict, and they can take away someone's Cambodian citizenship for treason. But at the same time, they also passed amendments which makes it impossible for Cambodia to hand over its citizens wanted for crimes. The show just keeps rolling on. Phil, just quickly, I've asked this question of many people. I think it's the only fitting way to end this podcast. But what do you think needs to be done?
Well, there needs to be a serious negotiation to reopen the border. The real impact of this border war is on the lives and livelihoods of the people who depend on the cross border trade, and you know, it's significant. And it works both ways. I mean, so both sides are hurting from this closure of the border. And I think that, you know, there needs to be a facilitated negotiation to try to get that peace deal happening. And now whether the U.S. or China is involved in that, whether ASEAN is involved in that, I don't know. But left to their own devices, I just don't see either Cambodia or Thailand stepping forward at this point. I see them both, in fact, digging their heels in, you know, throwing insults across the border at each other, you know, trading insults on social media, allowing these sort of crazy nationalists on both sides to dominate the conversation. You know, and that's a recipe for eventually sliding back into fighting again. So I don't think anybody wants the war to continue. I think that most people recognize that there has to be a negotiation to settle these things. It's time for grownups to step up on both sides and make it happen.
Phil Robinson, Director of Asia Human Rights and Labor Advocates, thank you very much. It's been a lovely chat.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the podcast.